Are you someone who doesn't take life too seriously? Do you sometimes find that a shot of whiskey isn't only deserved, but needed? If you said yes to either of those, welcome to the Whiskey and Lace podcast, where we have honest chats with everyday people, shit shows and all. I'm your host, Erica Altus, and I'm here to empower you to be the best version of yourself and perhaps share in a shot of whiskey. Now pour yourself a glass of wine and let's go. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Whiskey and Lace podcast. I am so excited to introduce you guys to today's guest. The moment I met this person, I knew we'd be instant friends. She's a wife, a mom, a personal friend, and started her career from the ground up in the culinary industry and paved the way for what I think for so many women in this space, and is currently the executive chef and director of culinary development for Jackson Family Wines. She has appeared a few times on the Food Network and even has a bio on IMDb. Everyone, please welcome this ray of sunshine to the Whiskey and Lace podcast, Tracy Shepos. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to have you, and we have so many questions for you today.
Well, thank you for having me. I feel so honored.
Did I get that right?
That was lovely. You're going to do my bio from here on out. Perfect. Anywhere I go, that's it, right there.
Well, did you know intro. That you had an IMDb?
I did not.
Oh, well, and I was like, all right, let me learn a little bit about you. Because just so you guys know, like, I love Tracy. We're totally friends. You know, we have each other's contacts, but like, we don't hang out all the time. It's usually work related. So like, I went in to do a little homework and I was like, this girl has an IMDb. You're a big deal.
I guess. What actually is an IMDb, right? That's how little I know. I'm guessing it's a page that like talks about it's like, when I've been on TV.
Yeah. So it's like actors typically have it. And yeah, it tells them right. Like what movies they've been in and like roles they played and that sort of
okay,
thing.
Okay, like, so I kind of know what it is.
So you're kind of a big deal.
Oh, okay.
But first and foremost, I want for anybody that's new that's listening, I want you to kind of give us like a little background of who you are. Did you grow up here? Like, what kind of family did you come from, just to get to know you a little bit better?
Sure. I did not grow up in Sonoma County, but I've lived here for so long that, one, this is my home. This is my forever place, but it almost feels like I grew up here.
Yeah.
I've lived here for 24 years.
Okay.
So I was born on the East Coast, and it's crazy because I moved to Southern California when I was about 4. So I didn't spend much time on the East Coast, but my entire family is, my mom was born in Brooklyn. My father was born in Pennsylvania, and they lived their whole lives there until as adults, they moved to California. So the crazy thing is I'll talk to guests at the winery and they'll be like, are you from the East Coast? Like
I kind of like hear it in your voice a little
they
bit.
They feel like they can sense it in my voice, which is wild to me because I'm not really from, I mean, I was born on the East Coast and you have, when your family's from there and we spent summers there, my sister and I. So the influence is there, but just when people can sense that from my voice is always kind of shocking to me.
It's weird. It's like in your blood.
Yeah. I always like to say I'm a West Coast girl with East Coast flavor because there's no way around it, right?
Totally.
And there is different sensibilities from East to West Coast and both my parents were raised there. And
so I'm sure that that's kind of like rubbed from them onto you, like rubbed off on them.
There's no way it couldn't be. And I'm happy for that. I think that's really great to have both of those parts of my life.
For sure. And you're Italian, correct?
I am. My mom's side is Italian. My father's side is Polish Slovak. But when you have an Italian side, it kind of wins over. You know, it kind of beats everybody else a little
totally.
Bit.
Totally.
And it was the dominant, you know, culinary. And I mean, it really was kind of the side that was big and loud and boisterous and overpowering.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of culturally that way, right?
It is, so, for sure.
East Coast Italians.
Yes. I mean, right, like we're,
No wonder. This explains all of it.
Yeah, there is some typical, right,
totally.
A little bit of
so
that.
So you moved here when, you moved here and moved to Southern California?
I moved to Southern California when I was like 4, and then I moved up to Northern California for culinary school right out of high school.
Oh, so you didn't grow up even up here in Sonoma County?
No. So I went to San Francisco for culinary school, and then I moved to New York, and then went back to the Bay Area. So I did some back and forth. I didn't move up here until I was 23.
Okay. So wait, how old were you when you went to culinary school?
19.
Oh, wow.
18. I was 18.
Oh, wow.
18, yeah, right out of high school. I just knew.
Okay, so that's one of my questions. Yeah. Like, how did you, like, what was it that drove you to, like, want to be a chef?
So there was a lot of things I obviously didn't know.
Okay.
But I just always loved cooking when I was young. And again, the Italian roots, you know, my mother, my grandmother, just that was part of what we did, homemade meals every night. And I had two parents that were working parents. So, but there was still like, and even my dad, who's not Italian, he was always been a great cook too. So both my parents have always been good cooks and enjoyed good food. So there was that side of it that they always like, you know, when we ate out, it was always at interesting places. My parents were the kind of people that found like the hidden hole in the wall gem place.
They're always the best.
That nobody knew about. And then we'd befriend the owners and that would be like our place. So
were you like helping when you were little in the kitchen and
absolutely.
Stuff?
Absolutely. It was something that was expected. Yeah. Right. Like we all participated in making dinner. So I was comfortable in the kitchen and I always really loved it. I felt like it was such a great way to express yourself and to express and share with other people, to be able to cook a meal for somebody. I mean, I comprehended that at a really, it really is. And I understood that at a very young age. It was something that I felt really connected to. I actually thought I wanted to be a pastry chef.
Really?
Because I've always been artistic. And so in my mind, the connection was artistry in cooking came through in pastry. And I very quickly realized I did not want to be a pastry chef because I'm not scientific. I'm a little bit more like off the cuff.
Yeah.
And you really have to appreciate science in a different way to be a pastry chef.
Yeah, that's why I can't bake. And you have to like follow directions, which like then I'm out.
Yeah, it's definitely a different, and I have such respect for pastry chefs because of that reason, because they really do have to take more parts of their personalities. And you have to, like you said, you have to kind of follow a recipe, but you also have to bring your own flair into it and that your own individuality.
Totally.
So going to culinary school helped me figure that out pretty fast.
Okay, and you went to culinary school in San Francisco, you said?
In San Francisco.
Do you feel like anybody who, excuse me as I burp, so rude.
Well, how appropriate. We're talking food and cooking. That's how comfortable we are.
Anything happens on this podcast, welcome. So if somebody wanted to be a chef, do you think that they'd have to go to culinary school in order to become one?
Okay, so this is a tough question because for me, it made a lot of sense because I was so young. I had actually started when I was 14 as a dishwasher. That was the other reason I knew, right? I kind of started—
Dishwashing led to wanting to be a chef.
I loved it. Well, because it was a— Because it's a team environment. Being True. In a kitchen is a real team environment. I was a sports player. So I've always loved that. But it also was like, you win as a team. Like it's really, I'm not a solo gal. I do okay on my own, but I love being amongst a community and with a team and that whole, like, it's just really fun to win
You're
together.
You're a people person.
And definitely. And also like you can help each other and everyone plays to their strengths. And so that, even as a dishwasher, I felt that.
Were you a dishwasher like at a job?
At a real job. I went to, I was a Girl Scout.
Yeah.
Right. And I had gone to this Girl Scout sleepaway camp when I was a kid. And my sister, who's 4 years older than me, had worked at the camp as a dishwasher. And so I just kind of followed in her footsteps and got a job. I left home for the summer.
Oh, wow.
And I went and worked as a dishwasher and it was so much fun.
Oh, and then did you like move up in that kitchen or like that was just the only experience
I think
there?
The next summer I went back and I was like a cook in that kitchen, but it was really like
everybody kind of did
hot dogs. Yeah, but we also like made homemade pancakes in the morning. Cool. So it was like a combination of, you know, yes, kid food, but also like things from scratch.
But it made you like see what it takes to be in a, you know, kitchen that has lots of moving parts.
Absolutely. And then going to culinary school, I think was a really good foundation. So I don't think that culinary school is a requirement. Okay. I think that if you go in with the right mindset, that it's just going to give you a foundation. It doesn't mean when you leave school, you're a chef.
Totally.
And I think that especially when I went years ago, it was kind of when culinary school wasn't as broad. It wasn't as accepted as an actual like school. It was a little bit fresh back then. And so people really went to school and left thinking, I'm ready to be at the top.
Yeah.
And you're not. Experience. It's such an experience-driven
career. It's kind of like getting your real estate license. Like I got mine. I'm like, I still can't sell a house.
I mean, it's...
I need to like go out there in the world and
yeah,
do it.
You yeah. Know? So I think that if you have the right mindset, but I also think that practical experience, you need to have that no matter what in the culinary world. So if you are fortunate enough and you can find someone that's willing to mentor you and a place you really, a business or a restaurant you connect with and a chef that's really willing to teach you, I think that can be just as good and sometimes even better than culinary school.
Right, right. And so when you went, after you went to culinary school, is that when you moved up to Sonoma County?
No, I went to New York. I stayed in the Bay Area for a little bit and then I moved to New York.
Okay.
And that was amazing.
Did you work in like a restaurant industry?
I did. I worked at Union Square Cafe, which is owned by a very famous restaurateur named Danny Meyer.
Well, how the hell did you get that job?
I literally showed up on their doorstep every day for like 2 weeks with my resume in hand and said, I want to work here. I want to work here. I want to work here.
Oh my gosh. I love you for that.
Persistence.
Seriously, sometimes you just have to put yourself in something like squeaky wheel gets the grease.
I mean, and the way I found them was I looked at the Zagat Guide, which I don't even know if Zagat exists anymore, but back then it was a big deal. You looked at the Zagat Guide to know like what restaurants were the ones to go to. And it was the number one rated restaurant in New York for like 16 years running. And I thought, okay, well, I'm in New York. I knew I wasn't going to be there forever.
So you had moved there already, knowing that this position was open?
No, I moved there. Luckily, my sister lived there, so I had a bit of a stepping stone.
Okay.
I moved there and I actually got a job at this really great Spanish restaurant that was brand new. I really enjoyed it. It was clearly from the start not successful. And I was like, I'm in New York. I need to be like, I wanted to be working at a New York level. I knew I was going to be there for a limited amount of time.
And how old were you at this point? Like, how long does it take to get through culinary school?
I was 20.
Oh, wow. So yeah, you were green.
Yeah. And I just kept showing up. I read about it and I just kept on showing up. And I was like, I really want to work here. And finally, I think they just got sick of me knocking on the door.
They're like, fine, get in here.
Yeah. And they let me in at the way bottom position. And I loved it.
You got to work your way up. Like what my brother-in-law, Mark Simpson, would always tell me when he's one of my business mentors. He's like, you got to pay your dues.
Absolutely.
I feel like you need to in any industry. Like, unless you don't clearly understand what it takes in a sense. I mean, for some people, I'm sure it's like they work their way to the top or whatever very quickly, or they just get to the top right away. But I do think that there's something to be said about like kind of starting at the bottom and understanding it, appreciating it. And then that way, when you are at the top, you can look at those positions at the bottom and appreciate them and have respect for them, right?
I couldn't agree more. And I think especially in, I mean, granted, this is the only, because I started so young, it's really the only industry I've ever known. But, you know, as a leader now, when I ask something of, say, my dishwashers or those were things that I was asked to do, right? Where I'm never looking at something and not thinking of when I was asked to do it or how I wanted to be treated. And I think that there's some, like you said, there's some real value in that.
Right.
For sure.
So you get this job at this restaurant, and how long did you work there?
I was there for about 2 years. I call it culinary boot camp. Working in Manhattan at the busiest restaurant in Manhattan at the time, there was no such thing as a slow day. Every single day, fully booked. So we're talking like high level every single day. Everything at the end of the day, if you didn't use it, it got moved. You started from scratch every day with everything you prepped.
Oh, wow.
It was wild and so wonderfully crazy. Thank God I did it when I was 20. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. They're still around.
Have you been back like since?
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course I have. I still keep in touch with my chef at the time. I mean, it was, that place really helped mold me into having a real respect for the craft. And it wasn't easy. I didn't naturally do well. I remember I had a sous chef at the time that was really hard on me at first, and to a point that I actually would go home and cry, which is not my personality at all. Right. But I would go home and I would cry because I felt like he was being so hard on me and I didn't understand why. And maybe that's because I'm a real social person. I'm a real friendly person. And so I'm guessing that maybe things came to me easier because of that, right? When you have that kind of personality and you're kind of quirky and
this was the first person to kind of be like,
this was the first person that didn't take that from me. And I never had thought of that as a, like, I'm going to try and get away with things because I was like this spunky gal. But I think that it just naturally happened because I just put myself out there that way. And he didn't care about that part of me. He didn't care that I was friendly. He didn't even really care that I was a team player. He cared about how my station looked and the product I was producing. That was his job. And he would come by, you know, they're called line checks. I do them now in my kitchen. And, you know, before service starts, you go and you check out all the product and you make sure that everything looks and tastes. And he would come by the line check and I would have something cut like a julienne of a carrot, right? And he would take a handful and put it on my cutting board. And if it didn't look right, it would just be tossed in the trash. It's like, okay, start over. And that was hard. I mean, this
humbling.
It's so humbling. And I know this story that I'm telling right now. Every chef out there, right? Like so many cooks, we all have this story, but it was really, really hard for me, but it really taught me a lot of things. It taught me expectation. It taught me that why would I want to not make my julienne perfect? He shouldn't be the only one expecting that. I should be expecting that of myself.
Oh, I love that. Now you can see it as that. But
yeah. And I had to really like make those things a priority for myself.
And you were only 19. So give yourself some grace because it's like, or 20, you know? Yeah. And like, that's hard to take feedback from somebody. I'm sure correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I'm sure he was a lot older than you at the time.
He was strong. Here I was kind of rainbows and unicorns. And he was more like, he was sharp edged, right? Yes. He was a much more kind of gruff personality. But the best part was we ended up working together for a long time and we definitely turned a corner.
Oh.
And I remember very clearly, when I started my job there, it was an AM position and he was the AM sous chef. And I worked my way through. It was a kitchen that really, you couldn't jump stations. The progress was working your way through station and station. And so I had worked my way into being the saute cook at night, which was a much bigger position than where I had started. And I remember one night, the sous chef at night called in sick. And so the AM sous chef had to stay. And it was the first time he had kind of seen me in that role. And I remember at the end of the night, him coming up and like patting me on the back and almost like he was surprised. I think he was even shocked because I think he never really thought that I would,
you could get there,
that I would do it, right? That I would hold tight to it. And then he saw me do it and I was running the line and I was cooking. And it was a really proud moment for me when he came and like gave me acknowledgement about that, because he helped get me there.
Yeah.
And I later in life, after I moved here and ended up going back to New York to do a James Beard dinner, I went and sought him out at his restaurant and thanked him.
Oh, I love you.
Because, I mean, it was hard and nobody wants to go home from work crying. Like,
yeah.
The other thing I learned from that is that I don't want to do that. I don't want any of my employees doing that. But it was the time and it was, you know, it happened. And
well,
it was,
everybody's a different type of teacher, right?
Yeah.
And everybody's a different type of student. So like.
Yeah. And for me, I gleaned from it what I needed to take away positive things.
That's
and
so awesome.
And to make me better.
I love that story. So then from there, you leave and you do then find yourself here.
I came back and I actually lived in San Francisco for a little while again. Okay. And I started my own catering business. It was back in the dot-com boom. And all these young people had a very large amount of money. And my sister was in the industry. And so I kind of used her as a resource to introduce me to people. And I did what I'd like to think of as the original, like, what are the home meals that people get? Blue ribbon
like HelloFresh.
Yes. So I was kind of the original HelloFresh in a way.
Too bad you didn't capitalize on that.
I am so kicking myself for this. Believe me, I've spent nights awake thinking, imagine what beach I could be laying on right now if. But
most of those meals are kind of gross, let's be honest.
Mine weren't though. That was the thing. That was the thing. So it was give credit to my mom, but it was her idea. I had actually gone and traveled around Europe for a few months and I came back to San Francisco and I was like, okay, what do I want to do? I knew I wanted to be in a restaurant, but I was like, how do I do this? And my mom had read some article. I don't even remember, but she was like, well, why don't you do like home cooked meals for people?
Yeah.
And I was like, deliver them to them. And that's exactly what I did. I had probably 15 or 20 clients, households, and I would alternate weeks. And so I would go and I'd cook all these meals at my tiny apartment in San Francisco. I hope nobody from the health department's listening. But like, so I'd spend like a whole day just shopping, right? I'd go to Costco, I'd go to markets, and then I'd write these menus and I'd cook these meals and I'd cook like 5 complete meals and package them. And then I had keys to all these apartments. And so I'd go to their homes and put food in their freezers and in their refrigerators and then email them directions on how to reheat them.
Oh,
so they, over
gosh,
the course of the week or 2 weeks, would pull the food out and like eat.
You are so ambitious. I love this about you.
I mean,
like, good for you. Like, you got creative, you know, you like
it was
filled
fun.
A need.
Yeah. It was really fun. And at the same time, I was like, but what I hated about that is it was on my own.
Yeah.
So I got a part-time job as a bartender.
Okay.
Because I was like, I really still loved being in the social part of, which was also great because I was like, I was a cocktail waitress, I was a server, I was a bartender. That was a time in my life where I did that a lot, which was also great because I learned the other side of the restaurant business.
Yeah.
I got to see front of the house more, but I also got to be social and hang out.
Right.
So
best of both worlds. So
yeah.
You do this for a while and then?
And then I realized I needed a more traditional job. I mean, it was like, that was great for a while and it was really good money, but it wasn't really like progressing my career.
Right.
And that's when I met Mark Stark.
Okay. Oh, the Starks. If you guys are not familiar with the Starks, they are family locally here and they own, I don't even know how many restaurants at this point,
nine.
Yeah. Amazing. Like, yeah. I can't even name one restaurant that I don't enjoy from
them.
They're
the best.
They're the best. So they hired you?
Well, so Mark was the chef at there was a restaurant called Lulu in San Francisco that was pretty famous at the time, and they were starting a catering department. And Mark was the chef, and Terry was the front of house director.
Terry's his wife.
And they were working together on the catering, and so he hired me. And I ended up being like his catering sous chef.
Oh, cool.
And we just instantly connected.
They're the nicest family.
They're the nicest family, and he, from a professional level, we just like, right from the start, we could talk food. We just had a thing.
It wasn't like your original sous chef in New York.
No, this was a very different relationship. And Mark was experienced. He taught me things. I mean, I learned so much, but I also just really enjoyed working with him. And people may not know this, but he's from Maryland, and that's where I was born.
Okay.
So he's an East Coaster as well. So we kind of had that connection. I just loved working with him from the first day I met him. So we ended up working together there. And at the time, he and Terry were talking about moving up to this area because they wanted to open a restaurant. Terry's family was from this area, and they knew that this was the place that they wanted to be.
Uh-huh.
Because you couldn't open a restaurant in San Francisco, like a family owned, it wasn't going to happen there. So they were already talking about this transition. So they ended up buying a house up here, but still weren't ready to open a restaurant. So Mark and I kind of transitioned slowly together up here. We worked at a restaurant together in oh gosh, San Rafael or that. I can't even remember that area. It doesn't even matter. We did that for a year. And this was the thing. I was young in San Francisco. Like there were a ton of places I could have been working. And I enjoyed working with Mark so much that that beat out me working. Like I literally worked in San Rafael or whatever, yeah. And it was a fine restaurant, but there was nothing super special about it. What was special about it was that Mark was there. And I enjoyed working with him so much and was learning so much that it didn't matter that I wasn't at some fancy, well-known place in San Francisco. And then they wanted to open up Willie's Wine Bar and invited me to, you know, ask me to come be the sous chef. And I took a little bit of convincing.
Really?
Because I just, again, I was young, right? Yeah. I was 22, 23, and Santa Rosa is not what it is now, right? Back then, it was not. I remember driving around with my then boyfriend, my now husband. I remember us driving around and I had the windows open. I remember yelling out the window, where are the bars? because I was.
And why does it smell like manure?
Yeah, I was like,
we're like kind of
in
a countdown.
Really, this is where they want me to, because it was a quiet sleeper farm town. And I was living in San Francisco where I could walk outside my front door and within blocks have live music and all the things, right? And so luckily, my smart husband did not love living in the city. He was not a city guy. And he really pushed for us to move. And I'm so grateful he did.
Yeah.
Because we moved.
So you took the job as a sous chef at
Willie's. I took the job. And God, that job. Oh my God. I loved it so much.
I had been there a few times. It burned down in the 2017 fires, unfortunately. Yeah. But like, it was the cutest little spot.
That place, can I tell you, it seems so long ago because it was over 20 years ago. But when we opened up that restaurant, Mark and Terry had nothing. I painted the walls. Terry and I laid the tile floor together.
Oh my God, I'm like going to cry because it burned down.
We built that place from, you know, we really, I wasn't just the sous chef there.
Yeah.
We were a family. We couldn't find an apartment. We lived with them for the first year of moving up here because I was so busy. I was working 6 days a week. We were opening up a restaurant. So we lived with Mark and Terry for the first year that I lived in Sonoma County.
I love this story so much. I had no idea that this was like part of your
journey. They are my family. Aww. I mean, they really are like second family to me. And they just, you know, we did this together.
Yeah.
And that was really an amazing thing for me because I was that invested in what I wanted to do. But to do it with people, someone like Mark, who on a culinary side, we were so in sync. And someone like Terry, who had these great visions and you could see what was to come.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
And they did back then too. They just didn't, you know, when you're first starting off, you don't have the funding. People don't know. You might know, but the rest of the people don't know. And so I remember 2 weeks before Willie's Wine Bar was supposed to open, it was maybe even 1 week, and we barely had any staff. I remember Mark and I joking, like, I guess we're working lunch yet. Like, we were just like, we just didn't.
You didn't have it all.
We didn't have it all figured out, but we did end up figuring it out. And it was so successful. And just obviously now.
So you worked at Willie's Wine Bar, and then what was their second location that they opened? It was a Monty's.
Seafood. Willie's Seafood was a second location.
Willie's Seafood,
A year later.
Oh, only a year
fast.
Later?
It was just about a year
Which,
later.
By the way, is Mark's.
Maybe. Yeah, no, I feel like it was within the second year.
That's
it was
incredible.
Fast.
And Willie's Seafood is located in Hillsburg, and it is honestly, out of all the Starks restaurants, Mark's favorite. So like, it's
they all have such
still
a,
there and
yeah,
great.
They're, it's wonderful. And so when that happened, when Willie's Seafood opened, and we all opened Willie's Seafood together too. So then it became this thing, like we all opened up, we just continued opening up restaurants together.
Yeah.
So I ended up becoming their executive chef de cuisine, helping up open up all these restaurants. And then, we opened up, right? Willie's Wine Bar, Willie's Seafood, Monty's, Barcode, which is no longer there. Do you remember Barcode?
Yes.
That was us. That was Mark
and
Terry.
What happened to that one? Just didn't work out.
It was a bar, not a restaurant.
Yeah.
And so we did food there, but it wasn't really it was fun while it lasted.
Yeah.
I had a key to the back door there. That was fun, right? That there'd be a line out front and I'd be like, hey.
I'm coming in.
Yeah. That place was a good time, but I think it just didn't really fit the mold of everything
totally,
they were doing.
Totally.
Monty's and then
Bravas.
I was not there for Bravas. I left right before Bravas, but for Steakhouse.
Oh, Starks.
And then catering.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a journey with that family. That's amazing that you got to be a part of all that. And it's so incredible from a local standpoint. Thank God we have the Starks, and thank you for building that with them, because they are hands down, like whenever somebody comes into my DMs, where do I go to dinner in Sonoma County? I just say, pick one of the Starks restaurants.
Yeah, you're fine. You'll be covered.
You will love the cocktails. You will love the food. I still have yet, by the way, they just opened up a recent restaurant called Augie's downtown Santa Rosa, and I have not yet been. I need to go there.
So good.
I'm so excited to try it out.
The cocktails, the Vespers.
Okay.
I need to go. But the food is delicious. I mean, it's great.
I'm so excited to try it. And like, congratulations to the Starks for how far they've come. And I love that you were part of that journey. So what led you then to Jackson Family Wines?
You know, as amazing as it was working with Mark and Terry, it was also, I worked like I owned the place.
Yeah.
And I was starting to kind of feel not very well-rounded as a human being.
Okay.
And that was on me, right? Yeah. Like I just worked and worked and worked because I was so into it and I was really committed that way. But I had just gotten married and I started to have this kind of personal epiphany of like, okay, I'm really proud of who I'm becoming as a chef, but what else am I? And I also just had this like, I had this moment where I thought, okay, in the culinary industry, the way that you are like acknowledge your, how well you do is almost like based on how much time you put in and what kind of loss you have. So I just remember like as a young wine cook sitting around the bars in New York and bragging, oh yeah, I just worked 16 days straight and some of them were doubles, or like, yeah, I missed my sister's wedding. Like
there's some ego like attached
this,
to it, right?
There was, and it was almost like this bragging rights of how much you've sacrificed and that somehow correlated to how good you were. And I subscribed to that for a long time. And then I started getting a little bit older and realized, no, wait a minute. Why? Like I can be good and still be married and maybe have kids and or I wanted to figure out how to do that.
Got it.
I think is more of what it was.
You wanted maybe something a little bit more balanced.
I did. And I wanted to kind of break that idea, that barrier of like, you were only as good as how many hours you worked and how much you sacrificed in your life. And so I thought, okay, I've put my time in. Luckily, again, moving to Sonoma County, I was able to be kind of a big fish in a smaller pond. And so I was able to make a name for myself in the community amongst the chefs, which was great. I mean, I know just about every chef in the community and enjoy them. And so I was like, okay, I need to take a step back and really see like, how can I do this on my own terms? And working at JFW, that's our Jackson Family Wines lingo, JFW. It was actually only supposed to be a transition job.
Oh,
because
interesting.
Because I had left Starks and I was like, I'm going to take a little time off, but I'm also not really good with too much time off. I'm not good with idle hands. So I started doing little things. I consulted, I taught, which was all really fun, but it was a lot of piecemealed together. And one of the things I started doing was working part-time at Jackson Family Wines. I had a friend who was the chef there and he said, well, why don't you just come and like hang out and work whenever you wanted? I was like, okay, that sounds great. I can make a little money and it's on my own terms. And then once I got there, I had that misconception that most people have about Kendall Jackson before I even went there to work. And it's like, oh, Kendall Jackson, big grocery store brand. Like I kind of thought that way. Mm-hmm. I had never actually even been on the property that long. And then I got there to work and I was like, oh my God, what have I been missing out on?
Yeah.
Because it's gorgeous.
And it's crazy to think that it's in our backyard.
Exactly. And so I felt a little bit of shame at first. I was like, oh, I can't believe I've lived here for almost 10 years. And I didn't know that the culinary gardens existed. And I didn't know that there was this great food and wine program. So by working there, I got to learn about that. And it just ended up being a really good fit. I kept on doing the other things. So I kind of did the whole part-time thing for a while. And then finally I did have a child and my husband was like, okay, you know what? Like pick a job. Basically he was like, pick a job. Like you're doing a lot of things and this is great. But he's like, your life is literally like a snow globe. Like
right.
I never knew what I was doing on any given day. And that's really hard to—
consistency. Yeah. You need that when you're a mom.
Yeah. Yeah. So I kind of went extreme another direction, right? Like where I was like, I want to do all the things.
Yeah.
And then I had to narrow it down and, Kendall Jackson and Jackson Family was the obvious choice because there was so much opportunity there for me. The culinary program was small-ish back then. And so there was a lot of growth that was happening. And I really loved being a part of that.
Yeah. And I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I work with them, you know, in a smaller way than you, but I feel like they are so like understanding of family and appreciate family and respect family. And I love that about them.
Yes.
And they're great to work for.
You're absolutely right. I felt that from the start. And I also felt, and I still feel this, it's one of the things I tell people when I hire them or when I interview them, if there's something you are really strongly interested in that makes sense for the business, it'll be supported. For me, it was cheese. I've always loved cheese. It's like a something that if I could just eat cheese or do like have my job be cheese, that would have been my job if I wasn't a chef. I figured out how to incorporate it into my job. But when I started at Jackson Family, we didn't have a cheese and wine program.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, hey, can I work on this? Can I create this? And they were like, sure, why not?
They are always open to people's ideas.
It didn't hurt them. Yeah. They supported it. They helped me take classes. They supported it, which again, it benefits them too.
Right.
But it was something that I really loved. And so it helped grow that part
totally
for me. And in turn, now we have a huge cheese program.
Yeah. You know, and I can piggyback off that. Like anytime that I brought an idea to the table with Jackson Family Wines, as far as an event goes or a fundraiser goes, I've never once had them be like, no. It's like, okay, let's figure this out. And I swear, I always say, I'm like, Jackson Family Wines, like their team could rule the world. There's somebody that knows who to talk to make things happen. And like, it's impressive. Like I'm always blown away. Like, wow, it's just like a well-oiled, well-run, respected machine. And it's amazing to witness and be a part of, honestly. So.
I couldn't say it better. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't remember, and tell me if you do. And I don't mean like to offend you by not remembering the first time I met you. But I think it's because when I did meet you, we hit it off so easily. Like I felt like I knew you my entire life. It wasn't like there was this awkwardness, and there never is. Anytime I see you at any event or when you know, come over for Sunday supper or like when you came over today, it's like instant, like, I love you. I'm so happy to have you here. But I don't remember the first time I met you.
You know what? I could really try thinking about it.
I'm sure
maybe
it'll
come to me. I don't completely remember either.
We've just known each other our whole lives. It's okay.
And yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right though. It does kind of feel that way. There's just always been a comfort.
Yes, totally. And like it's our conversation goes back and forth. My audience loves you. I think that we just like—
Well, they have excellent taste.
They definitely do. And I think that we just like, we just, our energies really work really well together. Yeah. And I'm so appreciative that Jackson Family Wine brought me to you, because it's been so fun getting to know you and cooking alongside you sometimes.
Yeah, we have a good time
and
cooking.
You've had, I will say, you've had more impact on me trying new foods that I've refused to do. You're like, come on, try the duck. Or, hey, don't.
Oh, that's right, the duck.
Yeah, the duck. Or you were like kind of getting on me about cheese, about not eating the rind. You're like, you gotta eat the rind. Try the rind. I'm like, ew, like it feels like that's like eating packaging. You're like, no, it's all a part of the experience. I'm like, okay, fine. Like you could probably get me to eat pretty much I bet you anything. But I would be a little nervous. Like if you try to get me to eat caviar or something, or like escargot.
Wait, you haven't had caviar?
Never.
Oh my gosh. I know what I'm bringing over next time.
No, I'm so scared of it because I don't like Tobiko, like fish eggs. And I feel like that is what the experience of caviar is going to be like, in a salty way.
This is
going
to be really fun. This is going to be a fun experiment. I love caviar. So
what did I get
torture
myself into?
Me. Let's do it. And you like bubbles. So caviar and bubbles.
I know. But like, oh, like it just seems like oysters too. Like, ugh, like. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you can't overthink it.
I'm a texture person.
I am too. I love caviar on potato chips with creme fraiche.
I've heard that, or Pringles.
Pringles are delicious too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, fine. I don't know what I've just got myself into, you
right?
guys, but like, we'll have to film this experience.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Hey, Whiskeys, it's your girl, Erica Altus, and I've got the inside scoop on something that'll make your wine-loving heart skip a beat. Drumroll, please. It's the Whiskey and Lace Wine Club, the brainchild of yours truly in partnership with your wine store. Now, I may have grown up surrounded by the vineyard charm of Sonoma County, but let me tell you, the wine club game was missing a dash of pizzazz. So I took matters into my own hands and created the Whiskey and Lace Wine Club. Imagine this, a selection of top-rated wines handpicked just for you, straight from the lush vineyards of California, Oregon, and beyond. My goal? To make you feel like you've got a wine expert BFF guiding you through the vineyard wonders. Whether you're a seasoned sipper or just starting your grape adventure, the Whiskey and Lace Wine Club is where the magic happens. And here's the cherry on top. 4 shipments a year, access to over 40 wineries and a whopping 200 wines, not to mention a delightful 20% off all wine, all day, every day. Ready to dive deep into this wine wonderland with me? Hop over to yourwinestore.com/whiskeyandlace, become a Whiskey and Lace Wine Club member, and let's turn every sip into a memory. Cheers. So while we're on the topic of like fun, you know, things, you, my friend, have been on the Food Network quite a few times, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't even know if you know how many times. Like, what shows have you been on? What is that like? And like, tell us the behind the scenes of what that looks like.
I don't know an actual count of how many times I've been on, but I've been privileged enough to be included on many Guys Grocery Games. I want to say 6 or 7 times.
And that's filmed here locally for those people who don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And then I've been on Tournament of Champions, Alex versus America, Grudge Match.
You've been on Bobby Flay.
Bobby Flay.
Dang.
Yeah. I've been on a lot.
Wait, have you been on Top Chef on Bravo?
No.
Oh, you know that's one of my favorite shows.
Is it? I think I'm past the prime. This is totally just my own.
No, I feel like you'd be so good at it, Tracy.
I think I might be past the prime age-wise. That's a young person's game, that show.
I would have viewing parties for you.
I think it's really fun to watch, and I find it to be very inspiring. That, and I don't know that I would not want to leave my family
right,
for.
That's a long.
When I was younger, and then that's what I mean by a young person's game. I think that you, like, it would be harder for me to leave. And people do it. They leave their family. I don't, yeah. Every time I hear those stories, I'm like, how did they possibly do that? Yeah. How did they leave their kid? But you do it, right?
And it looks really intense and emotionally draining.
It does appear that way too.
So you've been on the Food Network.
Although, and you know what? Listen, if they called me and said, do you want to go on it? I have a personal motto, which is like, I don't say no, because it's really great.
If there are any Top Chef executives listening, please, for my sake, because it's literally one of my most favorite reality shows. I absolutely love it. We've seen every single season. Like, I think you would be perfect because you have the perfect personality for it. And I really think you'd win.
Thanks. Okay.
So back to the Food Network. You've been on these shows. Like, is it a fun experience? Stressful? Like,
yes. It's all of the above. It is. It's really fun. It's definitely stressful because it's competition. I do love competition, though. So I appreciate that side of it. I have a personal motto when I do these shows. I want to win, obviously. You can't go in there not thinking you want to win. But I also, for me, the most important part is I want to just make sure I show up well. And by that, I mean, like, I don't want to do anything that's, I want to cook my food. I want to represent myself well. And obviously the company I work for, because that's part of, you know,
exposure to them.
But I just think, to me, number one, yes, I want to win. But if I don't win, as long as I show who I am in an accurate way, that's important to me as well, because I don't want to ever be seen as anything that I'm not. The times that I have not been successful were when I, in the moment, have been like, let me try this thing that I lost once because I used an ice cream machine. We don't have an ice cream machine at KJ. It's not something that but I was like, maybe I'll try this. And I totally flopped on it.
Now is not the time.
Yeah. And afterwards I was like, why didn't I follow my motto that I should have, which is like, you do your thing, right? Because that's part of it, is to show who you are and show the kind of food you make. And to me, there's also stories. When I make Italian food or something that reminds me of my roots or something my mom or my grandma made, I have the best success. And I also am able to talk about it in a different way to the judges.
Yeah. And it comes through into the food.
I feel like it does too. But it's always really fun.
Mm-hmm. Is it like long days?
Very long days. Very long. There's a lot of sitting around, right? Okay. Like, what gets condensed into half an hour or 45 minutes is 12 hours worth of a day.
Holy cow.
But I've also met some of the coolest people.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, I've made these really great chef friends, people from all over the country, you know.
Would
competing.
You ever want your own Food Network show? Like,
I mean,
Giada?
Obviously, if they're listening, of course I do. Yeah, I mean, I think that I have some, I really love cooking for people and with people.
You know what would be a fun concept? Is like having someone like me on your show with you that makes me try weird things and describe it and, like, you know.
Yes. So it's funny you say that, because I have a couple girlfriends that are always like, we should do a cooking show where we're just like sitting in front of you drinking wine and like making funny commentary and you're cooking. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like fun for you guys.
Yeah.
But in theory, it does kind of sound like fun, right? Like, if that's your style of humor or whatever it is, like people kind of being snarky or trying new things. I think Selena Gomez? Have you seen her cooking show?
No.
She has a cooking show when she brings in, she loves to cook. And so she'll bring in chefs and she'll like cook with them, but she's not that, I mean, she's not a professional chef, but she obviously wants to learn. But she also like brings, her friends will like show up in the kitchen and like hang out.
Oh my God, I love this.
I want to go on that show. I think that would be really fun. But I think the concept is really great, right? Like, because it's approachable. A lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, totally. So. Or like we've talked about too, like doing a little series where we pair like Cheez-Its and like Pringles to wine and, you know, or In-N-Out Burger. What am I going to pair with In-N-Out Burger, Tracy? Like, I think that those little concepts that resonate with so many people, where it's not like this high-end caviar, no offense, like, you know, food that people are like, oh, okay, you know, the next time I have that, I'm going to try to pair it with this. And it's like unexpected.
Yeah. And I think that that's kind of the way I cook as well. Like, I can cook highbrow fancy stuff, and I do sometimes, but I also like, you know, down home, like I can kind of cook everything in between. And I do naturally do that just for myself and because of my job. And so I think that, like you said, it's not always about the like fancy schmancy high end stuff. Like,
no, anytime that I'm working with Tracy in any sort of way, I always try to look out for you guys, because I'm like, okay, we have to make it easy, mm-hmm. you know? And that's actually, I have a lot of moms who wrote in some questions, not to bypass the Food Network, other than the fact that we just really want you to get a show. Yeah. But that sounded like a really awesome experience. And it's been really fun watching you there. But I do have a lot of moms that sent in questions. And one of the questions is, because you cook all day. Like, do you ever get home? You're like, I don't want to cook. I'm not in the mood to cook. And if that's the case, but obviously your mom, like, you got to get food on the table. What's one of like your go-to weeknight things that you make?
Yes, I cook a lot at home, but there are definitely nights where I'm like, this is not what I want. Like, I've been mm-hmm. cooking all day. So we'll do things like turkey lettuce cups, like ground. Okay. Like, I always have something like ground turkey in my freezer. And that's right. really easy. That cooks up really fast. And I always have things like lettuce. So
and you can throw it in a tortilla for a kid.
And like lots of sauces. I always have lots of condiments lying around. So okay. I think that makes it really easy. Like something that you can cook up and add a lot of quick flavor to, but that's also like, it's still really healthy.
Yeah. Totally.
Something like that.
All right, maybe we'll have to get like a recipe for like your lettuce cup, yeah. like your go-to. Like.
But I also, this time of year especially, I love soup.
Yeah, same.
So I'll make like a really big batch of soup and then freeze some. Yeah. So when it's a night that I either don't have time or I'm not feeling it, I can grab that out.
Totally. Totally.
And I still know it's so a easy. Good homemade thing.
Totally. Just like whip up like a good ham and cheese with it or something.
Yeah, exactly. But also like my cabinet last night, I made salad for myself and my son. And he was like, I want more than salad. And I heated him up ramen. Like, I still have mac and cheese in my cabinet. Like, I still have those things in my cabinet too. So, yeah, it's not all fancy pants. Like, I have real quick, easy things as well. I like those things too.
Totally, totally.
Quesadilla?
Yeah.
You can make me a quesadilla. I'm a happy gal.
Seriously. I just throw on like the pickled onions on top and like try to like spruce it up a bit.
I don't even do that. I eat the quesadilla with the green Herdez salsa, the avocado salsa.
That stuff is so good. If you guys have not tried that salsa, it is like—
It's the best.
It's so delicious. It's not in the refrigerator spot. It's like in the aisle like where all
they
the other
salsas
are.
They have it at Costco right now.
They do? Okay. Yeah. We got to go get some of that. Yeah. Well, like you get home from work, obviously from Jackson Family Wines, but let's backtrack a little. What does a day at Jackson Family Wines working as the executive chef look like?
I mean, it's really different every day, which is what makes my job really exciting. We have a wine program on site, so there's always that. But the best way to think of what we do is like catering. So it really is different every day. So sometimes I work nights, sometimes I'm days, I work weekends, but it's always something different, which is just really cool. So it can vary from maybe we've got lunch today and someone wants paella, but there's a dinner tonight and it's a 5-course high-end meal.
Wow. Because they do a lot of private events and like, you know, and then obviously
different
events.
Yeah, and it's a lot of the internal private because we're constantly, you know, hosting customers. So the only thing that is ever the constant there is our wine and food program.
Got it.
And that's right now, it's a 5-course tasting menu. And then we also added on a new one this past year, which we call Wine and Bites. And it's just a little bit more casual, just like 3 bites with wine. So that happens every day.
Okay.
So I have a team that just focuses on
Do you have like celebrities that come and they have like requests on like you making certain things there?
No.
Like, no? Okay. I was going to say.
No.
Who's the most like fancy pants you've ever cooked for?
Oh. Yeah. I mean, we've definitely hosted people that like recognizable people, but none of them have ever like requested specific things.
Got
it's
it.
All just like cook the food. And that's one of the great things about, because what we do is mostly in what we call like internals for the company. We don't have to treat it like a regular catering company where people are like, I need to taste the food ahead of time. They all trust us. They know us. They know we're going to do good food. So we have a lot of freedom as a team to be creative.
Totally.
And to like just kind of cook what we're feeling and what we want to play around with. And so that's really fun because we can cook whatever we want.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me get back to like a couple questions from my followers.
Yeah.
Because they sent in some really fun ones. Could you see yourself owning your own restaurant?
At this point, no.
Okay.
I think that I'm kind of past the point of
wanting to do it. That's a lot of work. I don't think people really realize, like I have a friend who just opened up a restaurant locally and I'm like, holy cow.
It's a lot.
A lot of moving parts.
And also like, I'm so well supported and get to do what I want to do at my job. I will say this. My husband and I talk often, and we have for years, about wanting to own an Italian deli.
Please do this. Oh my God. You know that deli sandwiches are my favorite food, right?
I mean, I didn't know that, by the way.
Yes.
But I love a good sandwich. And just again, because my husband's from Connecticut, born and raised. He didn't leave until in his 20s. So he was really raised on the East Coast. But like, we don't have things like that's one thing that we don't have on this side of the country the way that they do
like a sub.
those really good Italian sandwiches and the delis with the salumis hanging in, like, yeah, it's few and far between here.
Oh my God, you guys.
We've talked about that for years.
That would be so
maybe
much fun.
One day that's what, cause that I could be like, you know, in my mind, it's this very mystic pizza kind of thing, yeah, where it's like my son comes home from school and he walks to the, like he works in the deli and my mom's behind the counter and like, that's in my mind. It's kind of magical that way.
Totally. Like I've always said, like if I had any expertise in owning a restaurant, which I don't, and I don't have any interest in doing it, but if I did, I would so open a good sandwich shop. I love sandwiches.
Me too.
Well, you're gonna laugh at my ending question, but I'll ask you at the very end. So a good question that somebody have when they send it, I'm like, that's a great question. What is the difference between baking soda and baking powder? And is there an easy way? I mean, she's not a baker, you guys.
I don't know. I mean, I know that there's an answer to this. Her. Like, yeah, you did stump me.
Yeah.
One's soda and one's powder.
I know. I have no idea. Like,
so gosh.
One blows things.
Yeah.
Like,
one
up
is like
bigger,
a leavener.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. Like one gives poof and the other one, I forget what it does. Yeah.
Density.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
There's this really awesome thing called Google.
Yeah. Google is this thing I say to so many people.
I use it all the time.
I get DMs all the time. And I want to write back to so many. No offense, you guys, but like I say this in my head a lot. Google is an amazing resource.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But I would never say that. But well, there is another question I think you'll know the answer to. Mark and I argue over it. In fact, last night it sparked me wanting to ask you this question because I asked him to turn on the oven. And he always turns on convection bake. And I don't understand the difference between, he's like, it's better. It's better to use convection bake than just bake. And I'm like, what the fuck is the difference?
Okay. So this one I do know the answer to. So convection has air circulation.
Right.
So for certain things, yeah, I often cook on convection bake more than not, but there are real reasons that
you don't need to use it.
Well, oftentimes a recipe will tell you when to use it just for regular baking. You don't need to, but keep in mind that if you are following a recipe, for example, and the recipe says bake at 325, if you put it on convection bake, it generally makes the temperature higher.
Right. So like, how am I supposed to know if I'm baking a turkey if I need it on convection or if I just need it on
I like convection bake because it's got the air circulation. So I feel like the temperature
is a
more even temperature.
Last time we were baking like, you know, quartered potatoes. Did it need convection bake?
I would do convection bake on that.
All right.
Sorry.
It's okay. Like we need somebody needs to like share a list of all those things, you know, because I feel like every time I read a recipe, it just says bake at this. I rarely see convection bake.
I think it's because there are just lots of ovens that don't have that feature.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I like the air circulation. I think it's good. And especially if you're looking for something that you want to get height off of, like a leavener, like a cookie then convection bake. When you're baking, I think it's helpful. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to have to experiment more with convection bake. Yeah. I'm always just a bake girl. And Mark's like, no, put it on convection. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, because I'm so used to also doing it at bake that it does cook slower. So whenever we do use convection, I feel like I'm burning things or overcooking things quicker. So that makes sense.
I think that what you're talking about is your example from last night is a great one for convection. Like if you're roasting potatoes, something that you want to get hotter temperature, you want color caramelization on, I think convection bake can get that for you faster too.
Noted. Thank you. Mark, you were right.
Yeah. Sorry. First time for everything.
Totally. Well, thinking of like cooking and cooking wrong, is there a food that most people cook wrong when you go into like, and you see them cooking it, I don't know, like a poached egg or is there anything that you always see where you're like, no.
I don't know that it's a specific food, but I do think that cooking takes a lot of patience. And oftentimes people will say, put something in a pan before it's hot enough. Or I see a lot of like over stirring of something if you want it to cook. Like I always say, if you want something caramelized or you want, let's say you're searing a steak or a piece of fish or whatever, a piece of chicken, if the pan and your oil isn't hot enough, as soon as you put food in it, it lowers the temperature so much that it's going to be significantly longer to get that temperature to come back up. And that temperature and how much it's touching each other is going to achieve that caramelization, that browning.
The searing.
Yeah.
That's really funny because again, last night we had the potatoes with steak and Mark was cooking the hanger steak in a cast iron pan.
Yeah.
And he put it in and I'm like, that pan was not hot enough, Mark. Like it did not sizzle.
It needs to be loud.
Yes. And I'm like, you need to let that go.
See,
and
you were right.
Yeah. So, okay. One for Mark, one for me. But I also just got, I'm sure you're familiar with the brand Heston, the culinary pans.
Yeah.
And I just got those and there's definitely a learning curve, but I'm loving them. And I'm learning how to cook an egg in them. And actually, after this podcast, I might do it with you because I'm so close to getting it and I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Just like a fried egg?
Just like I heard that you put a little water in the pan with it, put a lid on it, and it's like the perfect egg. I'll show you. And like, yeah, maybe we'll film this part so we can show you when this airs. But
I'm
like,
curious.
They're a stainless steel pan and there's definitely a learning curve, but I'm learning very quickly that it needs to be hot before you put food in it. Like I first heat it, then I put some like good oils in it, you know, like ghee or bacon grease or a good oil.
Yeah.
And then put in the food. Like you don't just like put it in the pan because then shit sticks.
Don't rush it. And so one of the things I do, like last night, you guys should have, when you turned your oven on for your potatoes, but just put your cast iron pan in the oven.
Oh.
As your oven's heating up, your cast iron pan will get hot as well.
And then take that out then.
And then you can take the, obviously be sure and use a towel.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, then your cast iron pan is already started because the cast iron especially takes a long time to heat up.
Totally.
So why not just let it heat up in your oven and then put it on the stove and turn it on. But that's a good trick to like.
I cannot wait to share this with everybody. That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
I love this. Well, I'm learning a lot already.
But definitely, if you're caramelizing onions, don't stand there and stir them because the more you stir them, the less contact they're having with the pan. And contact with the pan is what's going to develop the color, which is the flavor.
Got it. And same with mushrooms, right? I heard that should not like put in a bunch of oil with mushrooms because they already have so much.
They have a lot of moisture. You actually need a good amount of oil with mushrooms.
Okay.
Because they
Heat up the oil first.
Definitely heat up the oil because they're like sponges. So they'll kind of soak up a lot of that oil. But one of our chef tricks is you don't salt mushrooms right away.
Okay.
So I'm always saying things like you put something in the pan, you immediately season it with salt. With mushrooms, you hold off. You want it to start getting caramelization before you add the salt because the salt will release the moisture. And if you release the moisture, they're not going to develop color.
Do you know one of my favorite smells in the world is butter and mushroom sauteing? It's like the best smell. Even if you don't like mushrooms, I'm sorry. You can't deny
it. It's not bad. I know. Okay, sorry. I'm going to tell you, mushrooms are my least favorite food.
Really?
Yeah, sadly.
Like all mushrooms?
Yeah. I wish it weren't. I'm a real textural eater and I can't. The texture
you won't eat mushrooms, but you'll eat caviar.
I know, right? Wow. I try. And this time of year, like everybody's foraging and people in my kitchen, they're going out foraging and they bring them back. And I want to like them so badly. I'll eat them and I love cooking with them.
I don't like the trumpet mushrooms.
But it's just always been a texture for me that's been really challenging.
No, same here. Like it took me a while, but then like once I like top them on a steak or something, it is like saute. I like them cooked better than I like them raw. That's for sure. But no, I mean, totally, totally get it. That makes sense. Is there a favorite and most used kitchen tool in your kitchen?
For me, it's my cast iron pan.
Same.
Yeah. And my hands.
People don't know how.
Honestly, your hands are, you could do so much without even a tool. Like people forget, like there's.
Yeah, like tear up your lettuce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My cast iron pan I use more than anything.
I get a lot of questions on how to clean them. Do you have any tips for that?
Yeah, I have a whole, like I'll send it to you. I have this whole sheet on how to clean a cast iron pan.
Oh yeah, send it to me.
You know, you want to get it nice and hot. And then I have a scrubby that I only use for cast iron.
Okay.
But you put a lot of salt in the pan.
Oh.
You like coat the bottom of the pan with salt and you can use that scrubby like as a, so the salt and the scrubby together become really abrasive on the pan and take up any gook, but it also will soak up any of that oil.
Yeah.
And then take a dry towel and wipe it out.
Okay.
And then
add some oil, right?
Add oil, but like you want to make it really clean. Or another thing is you could take the salt and like a wooden spoon and use that wooden spoon to scrape it really well.
How come sometimes when I pull out my cast iron pan, it almost looks like there's like a rust color in certain spots?
Yeah, I think that's just you haven't oiled it enough.
Noted.
So I always like I'll clean it, I oil it, and then I just put it right back in my oven.
Okay.
Because even though the oven's not on, there's still like an ambient temperature.
Yeah.
And then the same thing every time I heat up my oven, even if I'm not using the cast iron pan, it's getting heated up.
Oh, so that's a smart thing to do. Just throw it in there.
Just leave it in there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good to know.
I will tell you this though. I just bought one for my mom for Christmas. I found this great, it's a scrubby, but it's like metal on the outside.
Okay.
And I bought one for my mom for her cast iron pan.
Okay.
And I'm going to see her this weekend. And one of the things I was like, I want to ask her about that because it looked really cool. It was like, but it's the same idea, right? You can have this thing for $20 or I just have my own scrubby that I just have for that.
Well, we're going to need a link to the scrubby because a lot of us have cast iron pans and we need to like.
Well, let me ask her first how much she liked it.
Well, and the one that you have too.
Oh, mine is literally just like, you know, those hand scrubbies. It's just a regular scrubby. It's just a regular scrubby, and I just use that
it's
one.
It's just the term scrubby.
It's a regular scrubby. I don't know, a dish pan, whatever it is, a scrubby. But I just use that one only for my cast iron because it gets really greasy and yucky.
I've seen like these metal mesh looking
things.
That's
the one I got from my mom.
Okay. We'll report back on that, everybody. Is there a certain chef who has inspired you or continues to inspire you?
I mean, I talked about Mark Stark, and that's for sure, you know, he has been a mentor of mine for years and still continues to be. And I see them regularly. And every time I'm with him, we just instantly start food. You know, my husband makes fun of us. He's like, nobody else exists in the room when you guys are together talking to each other, because we just like can go on and on. Aww. And so I really have always just really appreciated him and the way he approaches and looks at food, and the way that he's always just, he wants to continue to learn, and he still does the things that even as young chefs, we all did, where it was like you would spend a whole day cooking something just because it sounded like fun and interesting. Yeah. And he still does that kind of stuff. And that's really cool to see someone that has been in the industry and has been in their career for so long, still being so open-minded about and wanting to learn new things.
Yeah. Well, maybe Mark Stark and you should open up this Italian deli together. They have a Jewish deli.
Yeah. Yes. I'm sure. If I went to Mark and was like, I don't doubt that he would be like, yeah, let's do it. But they also just opened up another restaurant
on their plate.
So they're still in the phase where they're like, we're never doing this again.
Totally. I've heard them say that a time or two before.
I've heard them say it like 8 times. So it happened, right? Opening up a restaurant is really, really hard.
But
regardless of how many times you've done it.
I didn't realize, and I think when I heard this was when COVID hit, and I realized how many people they employ locally is like incredible.
Yeah.
400 people.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Kudos to them. They thank God for them. Okay. We have 2 more questions.
Okay.
And one of them is, what is something you're most proud of? I know that you answered as a chef, like, you know, getting through the sous chef, but what are you most proud of as a mom?
Oh, God, that's so hard because I'm just proud to be a mom in general. I honestly didn't think I was going to be a mom. It wasn't something that I was like driven to do. Quite the opposite. I was like, I don't really think, because I had that mentality that like I was so career driven. And so I'm so happy that I decided to go down that path and to have a child, because it has been amazing and
how
wonderful.
Old is he?
He just turned 13. And I still have moments regularly where I just look at him and I think, I helped, like I created you.
Yeah,
like
it's just weird, right?
Mind-blowing to me. And I think that will never go away. And I just love that he loves to eat good food. So that's really great. He appreciates good food, sometimes too much.
Oh my God, that's so Austin.
Can't take that kid for sushi.
Oh my God, this is Austin.
I can't take him to Hana anymore.
It's like $200.
Nope, can't do it.
We want to know something funny is that when I take Austin to like Lepe's Taqueria, he'll be like tapping me because I'll be ordering for him. He's only 9. He's like, mom, can you ask them to squeeze fresh lime into my burrito? I'm like, absolutely not. But he knows good food.
Yeah.
And I swear it's because I cook homemade meals and he's in the kitchen with me.
Yeah.
And he just, Charlotte's a little pickier, but she's only 5. But it is really something that I'm proud of too as a mom. Is like,
yeah. Well, and when they get to be older too, like now it's, we go out to eat together in a way where he's just like, we share everything and he's in it.
Oh, I love that. Okay. Last and final question. And it's one of the most important questions. I'm asking this question to every guest in season 2 as the last question. Since sandwiches are my favorite food, what is the perfect sandwich in your eyes?
Oh, okay. Only it's specific time of year. This is so seasonal. A BLT.
What?
I love a BLT, but I will only eat a BLT
in the
summer. Well, I'm going to tell you my second favorite sandwich too. It has to be when the tomatoes are, I will not eat a BLT right now.
Okay.
In January. No way.
No, the tomatoes make it.
But it's like, I love it with perfectly toasted sourdough bread. I'm not a huge mayonnaise fan, but on a BLT, definitely. Well, I think I like mayonnaise too much. And so I've had to trick myself to be like, I don't like it or else I want to eat it on everything.
Oh my God, don't trick yourself. It's the best.
No, it's mayonnaise. Oh my God. French fries and aioli.
I will die on this hill. Mayonnaise is so good.
It's really good.
And nobody likes a dry sandwich.
I know, but I like try to avoid it because then all of a sudden I'm eating mayonnaise on everything. But on a BLT, I lather both sides of the bread, really good lettuce, fresh tomato, really well salted black pepper, really good bacon.
Yeah.
I love
a BLT.
Do you
put an avocado in there?
Sometimes I do. The other thing I like on it is that in my cookbook, there's a dill pickle dip.
What?
Yeah, it's really good.
Wait, the Harvest cookbook?
Has a dill pickle dip. Yeah, dill pickle dip. So I'll make that dip during the summer for things. And if that dip is in my fridge, that on the BLT.
Yum.
So good.
And I've heard a trick with BLTs, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I only toast one side of my bread because otherwise it gets too hard. And I've found that it is like, that's like such a good tip.
I think that's a great tip. Yeah.
All right, so what's your second favorite sandwich?
It seems simple, but I mean, I probably have a BLT at least once a week for dinner during the summer.
They're so good.
They're just really
good. Even Austin loves BLTs.
Really good.
They're so delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's your favorite sandwich. I'm so sorry. Was there a second favorite sandwich?
A muffaletta sandwich.
Oh, and that's with like...
It's like olives and chardonnay and pepperoncini and...
You know who has a good one? Have you been to Valley in Sonoma? Mm-mm. Oh my gosh. You should go to Valley. And a friend of mine owns it. And they have a muffaletta sandwich. And it is...
I'm going tomorrow.
I'm serious. It's in Sonoma. And my friend brought me one from there. And it looked very small. It didn't look like anything great. I took a bite. I was only planning on eating half of it. I'm like, nope, I'm eating this whole thing. It was delicious. I can't believe you haven't been there.
Love a muffaletta sandwich.
Oh, you'll love this restaurant. It's amazing.
The bread gets like soaked by the oil of the all. It's
at the topping on. Mm-hmm. Yum.
Yeah.
I can get on board. Is there cheese on it? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Is it? It's not Swiss, is it?
No, it's like provolone or yeah.
I can't do
and
Swiss.
All the meats. I do see now. I a Reuben. You give me a Reuben.
Oh, I love Reuben. I love a Reuben Jack.
Oh, see, I don't love rye bread.
Oh, okay.
And Swiss cheese, I don't mind, it's but not normally on my sandwiches. But on a Reuben, I want rye bread and I want Swiss.
Where is the best Reuben in Sonoma County?
My favorite place. I mean, Grossman's has a good Reuben.
Okay,
but you know who else does a great Reuben is Max downtown. Yes.
Max does do a good
curly
Reuben.
Fries and Reuben.
Oh, curly fries.
People don't know they have curly fries.
They do? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to go there this weekend.
Somebody
Yum.
Needs to up. They're going to have to open up. They're going to have to up their curly fry inventory. But yeah, their Reuben is delicious.
Oh my God. Well, you know what? We could go on and on about sandwiches.
I know. I'm like, now you've opened the door. Like peanut butter and jelly, truthfully. I know that seems simple, but it's a go-to for me.
Oh, it's so, I haven't had one in so long.
Crunchy
or creamy?
Crunchy. But I make my own peanut butter, which everybody should do this. Here's another quick tip.
Okay.
Go to Costco, buy roasted salted peanuts, put them in a Cuisinart.
Really?
That's
it. Do you
have
to add oil?
Nope. I don't add a single thing. I
Shut
just
up.
Turn the Cuisinart on and I walk away. And if you want it really smooth, walk away.
Can you add some honey to make it a little like honey?
You could
roasted?
Do whatever you want. But that way you can also, you can make it like, mine is probably like a little bit less crunchy than grocery store. Like I make it a little bit, it's almost like
still
in between
there,
smooth and crunchy.
I love this tip. I'm going to go try that.
It's so good for you. Like literally all, then there's no sugar. There's no, it's just straight up.
Yeah, it's straight up just the peanuts. I go to Whole Foods. They have those grinding machines and I pay an astronomical amount per like the weight, but it is on another level of delicious. But I do get the honey roasted one because it is so good, but it's not as
tasty.
Good for you.
I'm just like my go-to snack are things like apple and peanut butter, celery and peanut butter, peanut butter and jelly.
So good.
I guess I really like sandwiches.
I'm telling you, they're the best food in the world. I mean, if I could choose my last supper, it'd be a deli sandwich with a glass of Chardonnay or like something like that.
Really?
I'd be so stoked.
Mine would definitely include Caesar salad and French onion soup and French fries.
I love this. All right.
Well, other things.
I'm sure. Yeah. It'd be really hard to choose. Uh-huh. Well, thank you so much for being here, talking all about food and your career. It's been so nice, like getting to know you and your background. And thank you so much for taking the time to sit here with us and have
Anytime.
This conversation. All right. Well, she's going to go make me eat caviar at some point.
We're going to go cook an egg.
Gear up. Yeah. Let's go cook an egg. All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in and we'll talk next week.
All right, friends, that's all for today's episode of the Whiskey and Lace podcast. If you liked what you heard, please share the love and leave a review. And remember to join the Whiskey and Lace community by following me on TikTok and Instagram at Whiskey and Lace. And send me a DM to say hi and mention this episode. I'd love to meet you. See you next week.